back, WNST, Towson Baltimore and Baltimore Positive. You know, if you're watching out on YouTube or anywhere where the video thing works out on social, I put the sort of happy version of Baltimore behind when I'm having happy Baltimore people around. This guy is, I drive by his place all the time. He's down in McHenry Row. He's down on Ford Avenue with a little cafe. We used to be sort of friends. Like once in a while, we get a meal together. This is before COVID. I'm trying to reach out to people like Todd Marks from Mindgrub to make sure I still have friends and to make sure when this thing's over and I get my second shot in a couple of days that like I actually have some people to network here. Todd, how are you? I would say happy spring, happy Preakness, happy coming out of the pandemic, wherever we are in all of this. I know you and your team have been hard at work in South Baltimore a lot of ways during this mess, but the end of this mess signals, I think, a fresh time for guys like you and me, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a bit of a dawn happening to some degree as far as a fresh time. But I think the pandemic itself was more of a catalyst for a lot of things. So I don't know that there's like an end and a start. I think it's really just a beginning for things that hadn't been looked at with a real hard look in a long time.
And what are they? I mean, let's dare I say, what have we learned here?
You know, through this. You know, that health is important and viruses kill, right? That's one thing. But that's the obvious, you know, that Black Lives do matter, right? That came out amongst all this. I mean, you know, George Floyd, right? Like that was a victory in that that officer was tried for murder. Right. And second degree murder. What's that?
And convicted.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Sorry. Convicted of second degree murder. Right. Which is interesting. That means that he might not have set out to kill him, but the fact that he certainly didn't try to save him meant he tried to kill him. Right. And that was at the, you know, the heart of a lot of what's been happening, you know, in our police. And our police are, they have 2-year associate's degrees, right? It's not our rocket scientists, you know, it's our physically fit, generally 2-year associate degree. They are instruments of what they learn, right? And learning came at the heart of everything. We learned a ton over this pandemic. We learned about institutional racism, right? That really came out, you know, in Baltimore. I think we've talked about redlining here for years. Nobody really cared. The word institutional racism came out, and now there's a better word for it that's a little harsher than redlining. That seems like it's kind of like a pass.
Well, speaking of the red line as well, you know, federal funding and infrastructure and things that will really change the country. And, you know, I see them on train tracks, and I wouldn't necessarily be the guy pimping Amtrak or thinking everybody's going to get on a train like they did in Europe a century ago, right? But innovative ideas. I mean, I have Bill Cole on all the time from Cole Roofing, and we're always talking about solar. And you know, when are these things coming? When are we off of petroleum? You know, all of these things that we've talked about much of our lifetime. I remember back in '76, Todd. I think I'm older than you. I'm not sure. They told me we were going metric system back in '76. Remember that? This was going to be a leader of coffee.
No. Everyone else is going to convert to our system. We're not going to convert to their system. Goodness, no.
Miles for everyone. No kilometers for any. But we hear about change. And I heard my dad talk about FDR because my dad was born in 1919. And, you know, my dad walked soup lines in 1929 in Scranton, Pennsylvania after the crash. So my dad taught me in a different way generationally. But I hear about these. I think everyone that was around for 9/11 remembers before and after what it was like security-wise going to an airport, how we felt about things. I think on the back end of this, somebody's going to ring a bell and say, pandemic's over, and these anti-vax people there may not be a pandemic over the way we would want it to be over, like polio was. I think we're all waiting for something. I think we're all waiting for something later in the summer or the fall that feels like what a year and a half felt like, where we don't see people with masks, we hug, we shake. And I don't know that any of that's coming. I think there's going to be a real tectonic plate shift in that.
So unfortunately, I don't know that we'll ever reach herd immunity. I mean, as a split country, I mean, we're split three ways, right? We have a third Republicans, a third Democrats. And I almost say like 50% of the voting bases are actually independents, believe it or not, some crazy statistic. But let's call it a third too. Well, you know, it takes, I think, at least like a super majority of people who are immune or are wearing masks before you can get herd immunity. So even if, you know, 30% of our population doesn't want to get the vaccine, then we might not reach herd immunity as a country. And so we'll just have to, you know, be ready to wear masks for a while, particularly for our children. Pfizer now might, in the next 2 weeks, move to 12 to 15 year olds. But, you know, the children eventually, you know, we don't know what the longitudinal studies are, you know, on children, but right now it looks like it's not bad for them, but they won't be able to get the vaccine. So we're a divided country. We're not going to probably reach herd immunity. So there's going to be no, hey, it's back to, you know,
party time, roaring 20s. I want roaring 20s is what I want. Todd Marks is here from Mind Grub. I'm wearing my Chicken Palooza shirt because you've had some association with Royal Farms and designing some of this stuff. But go ahead. You had another thought on that.
No, you mentioned the red line. So that's one thing that, you know, that I can't stress enough. Like you talk about Baltimore Positive, you know, and, you know, we threw up a site with some partners. We Are Baltimore. We joined the Baltimore Tracks Initiative, right? We're doing a lot of stuff to try to focus on, you know, diversity, equality, and inclusion for Baltimore, because I hate to say it, we are still quite the segregated city. But you mentioned the red line. Those are the types of things that we need around here. We need to mix it up. So if you bring the red line across West Baltimore and you really invest in each one of those stops, right, that'll really mix it up. And it's not just transportation. It's health, too, right? We have Bonsecours now, I think.
It's a Lifebridge.
Lifebridge now, right? And then we have Hopkins on the east side, right? So we have some good health epicenters. As far as workforce development, that and education is where we really need to invest. So as a segregated city, we also have very strong private school system and not as strong public school system. And so right from the onset, we're really kind of dividing our population. And it's actually along socioeconomic lines, which happens to have a strong correlation between, different races. But if you look at different cities, the divide is mostly socioeconomic. You go toward the, you know, southern border, it happens to be Hispanic. You go to San Francisco, it's not college bound versus, you know, Google workers, right? So very kind of socioeconomic. But we need to mix it up. And a lot of it is finances and accounting based. So I go back to the red line, which can mix it up both physically and create all these pockets to establish, you know, business and wealth, right? The redlining historically was not providing mortgages to those areas. So you don't get that multi-generational wealth. There's a lot of positive things we're doing. There's a big initiative to bring minority businesses into downtown. And downtown right now really needs to we have an opportunity to be on the forefront of the new urban center, because it is this work, live, play environment. And we have a traditional downtown, which is a lot of concrete, right? And so we can now re-envision how we create work, live, play environments that is, you know, diverse, inclusive, and equitable, right? We have a huge possibility to really mix it up with our downtown core right now, which, and let's be honest, we all talk about the white owl and the black butterfly. I see a lot more diversity in those areas, but
I do as well. My wife and I walk the city, you know, like a lot. Like I live here. Full disclosure, this is my view. This is out my window. This is what I wake up to every day, right? So we walk that way toward East Baltimore and take different pathways. I mean, we walk Lombard sometimes. Sometimes we walk Banks. Sometimes we walk Allison. Sometimes we walk the water. We love walking the water on a nice day. But we walk the Highland Town all the time. I mean, the Chaucer is one of my sponsors now with Brian Eater. I mean, that's dead Highland Town, top of Highland Town, top of Highland Avenue. We walk the city, and it has changed through this. I think it's cleaner.
Absolutely.
And I'm looking forward to getting with Brandon and getting a crab cake over Coco's next month, because I find the city to be getting better. And I think that's very hard when you're watching Fox 45 every morning and there was a murder last night and shootings in Carroll Park. Like, that's been the story from the beginning of time. Now, that has to change. And we have to – but there's a lot of things going on in this city and a lot of good people in this city.
A lot of things happening. And Brandon, I mean – I'm super encouraged. So, you know, a lot of things haven't changed in Baltimore, right? And our government has been much of the same, and they've been getting themselves in trouble. But Brandon, I'm impressed. I've actually heard some really good things out of his, you know, out of his mouth at Sunrise, but sat on board meetings with him, really sharp guy, really impressive, seems to really want to make some change. I know he got a little hammered because of much of the repeat of the same budget we've had, but you got to give him 4 years and let's see that budget shift toward health, transportation, workforce development, education, hearing commission. That's, you know, that's a big push, obviously, at the state level. But if we can get the right funding and the right focus on education, then, you know, between the kind of forward momentum we got during the pandemic, right, and things are mixing up. I see it on the streets. We are starting to get a, you know, very mixed kind of crowd. I see it in the restaurants with the 25 to now 50% we can have in there. Right. I'm starting to see.
I fully agree with you. And for anybody here and any of the business owners to see their clientele change dramatically over the last, let's say, 36 months. Right. Like it's very obvious to me when I go out that it felt like a segment of the population used the city before 10 p.m. and another segment used it after 10 p.m. It feels like everybody's using the city now in daylight, families. I mean, just. And I, you know, and I know it's early spring and I hate the dirt bikes, you know, I mean, Brandon has to do something about that. I'm not out on Twitter every day about that, but and someone got hit over in West Arlington last week. But I would just say this, I see what has happened in Medellin. I see what's happened in places like Detroit. I see places in our country like Nashville that have grown and Austin and other places that have just become better since the turn of the century. This is our opportunity, right? Like, and when I walk around Baltimore, I see so much European feel. When I talk to people from out of town, they talk about, you're kind of hip like New Orleans and kind of foodie, but you have those crab things and you have this quirky stuff and you wear the weirdest stuff on your t-shirts and you eat that Royal Farms. We have quirkiness that we really should embrace around here. And I know like Baltimore County had Johnny O on, and obviously with Don Moeller all the time, the king of Catonsville, you know, Catonsville's this music hub and they're going to have outdoor music there now and trying to turn that into
a
little.
It's not just a music hub. I think it's the music capital of Maryland.
Correct.
But yet had no live music. But it is absolutely, but it has amazing bluegrass store. Bills is there, right? It does obviously is a bit of an.
But that's changing. So we're talking about things that are going to change. We're actually going to get in our car and go to Catonsville. My dude, Jason Seamer was playing at the 818 out on the deck the other day. Beautiful 85 degree day. So when I start seeing Catonsville becoming a little suburban Fells Point kind of vibe kind of thing and foodie thing, I'm seeing real growth in our area that nobody's talking about. They talk about the murder rate. It pisses me off, Todd.
Right. You got to talk about both. I mean, we can't tuck that under the rug. I mean, obviously if you look at growth, look at Harbor East, Harbor Point. Yeah. There's a ton of growth happening. But again, that's in the urban core, right? And then you look at Catonsville, and Catonsville is just outside of the city limits, right? In the county, right? So there's amazing things happening in those areas, but we do honestly need to look at East and West Baltimore. And if we can connect Catonsville, so the red line would have gone right north of Catonsville, right along that 40 corridor, right? And then it would have cut right through downtown and it would have ended up going, you know, by Canton, which you mentioned, in Highland Town, which is where it ends up. So you have those pockets and then you connect the areas that have not benefited from as much investment in East and West Baltimore, and you connect those. Now you've at least connected the transportation ways, because I have ridden the bus there. They've made improvements. They, you know, they realigned the bus schedules and stuff. But
I grew up on the bus lines. My parents never drove. Right. So I grew up in East Baltimore. I took the 23 bus.
Okay.
It was the only way. I mean, I took the 23 bus.
It's a little painfully slow.
Well, you know, you didn't notice that in 1978 when you were 10 and you needed to get
to
the ballpark.
Well, because it's so much faster than walking.
Or your parents were taking you to Highland Town for music lessons at Jaeger's, or, you know, for a slice of pizza at Alona's or whatever. But, yeah, I took the bus recently as a one-car family when my wife worked in Hunt Valley before she had cancer. Maybe a decade ago, I took the bus frequently for 2 or 3 years. I didn't have a problem with it because – I'm not like that. And I'll say this, where did you grow up? So I grew up in Dundalk. I was born in 68. When the subway was born in Baltimore, I was about 12 or 13, maybe 80, 81, 82. You can look it up. It was in that range. And we came downtown on the bus and got on the subway to take it because I had never been on a subway because I had never been in New York or any, you know, I didn't grow up Gucci, you know. So we took the subway out to Owings Mills or Mandama, wherever it went at that point, turned around and took it back. And we thought, great, we'll get on the subway again. I don't think I took the subway again until like 1998 or something, like literally forever. And I took it when I lived here out to Owings Mills for Ravens practice, because the Ravens practice in Owings Mills, one of my employees would pick me up, and we had one car. So I did take public transportation for a good 3 or 4 years here, maybe 2007, 8, 9, 10, 11. And I didn't have a problem with it, but I often wondered as a kid, like, why do we only have one subway line that only goes to one place when you're like, go to New York or Paris or normal places? They built like a real subway. And then I realized, oh, they didn't want black people and white people. Oh, okay. It took me till I was 45 years old to sort of figure that out. You know,
you got
to
keep going. So here's the issue. You look at like, the subway goes from Owings Mills to Hopkins, right?
So born in 1974, though, right? It's a 1975 concept.
Right.
When that money was.
But it dead ends at Hopkins Hospital. And that was a major employer. So they looked at where's the major employer and where are the employees and how do we make a transportation line to connect the two? That's simply what it was, is to get people to.
But the rest of it didn't happen.
You
got to
keep going.
Reason.
You got to build the whole infrastructure. So we have like three lines, right? And like we need a red line that you got to keep going. You look at the amount of car traffic that comes from Frederick, Cecil, Howard, and Baltimore counties. That 70 corridor, or Carroll, sorry, Carroll County by Frederick. That whole 70s corridor coming in. All that traffic. Right. All that wasted energy and gas and cars and carbon emissions. And right. But instead, if you had just a red line that just brings that all in and all that saved energy, right, now you can like reinvest, and we can reinvest in those pockets of the community that need investment. Right. It's just a matter of accounting and efficiency. And but transportation, we just have to keep going. We have some good subway lines, but we don't have enough that it becomes viable. Only if you want to go from particular, like when you're a kid, if you know, and you're young, you only need to go a couple blocks, and damn, that bus is really helpful because it's so much faster than walking a couple blocks. But if you want to go to, you know, like now we're starting to realign our bus toward, the new harbor, the new port, where the Amazon shipping facility is, and
Trade Point.
Trade Point, right. Yeah.
So one of our clients and sponsors here.
Okay, great. So Trade Point now, right? There was tons of warehouses back when it was big steel industry and everything, huge major employer, and people hopped on like railroads probably to get to work back in the day. That went away, right? The steel industry waned and the ports, you know, lost their depth and stuff. They redug out the ports. They get the likes of Amazon and other companies in Trade Point. It's a major employer again. Now, all of a sudden, it's like, well, shoot, how do we get the employees here? So then you start getting realignment of bus routes. You start driving them to Trade Point, right? But we got to think, it's not just a matter of we have to, it's like we're Western medicine here, right? You get the heart attack, then you show up at the hospital and you ask, what do I do about this, right? And you throw them on some meds. It's once Amazon shows up, we're like, damn, how do we get the employees here? We got to think of a grid, and we got to just have, you can get from A to B, A to Z, get across the grid from any one point to any other point in as rapid succession as possible, right? It shouldn't be as much as trying to link up a single point post haste with some starting point where we think we can, you know, group employees. You know, we have to grid out the city, and things like 5G, I'm worried about it being the next, you know, divider. You know, we want, you know, digital quality too. And 5G, if we just roll it out in, you know, Locust Point and Roland Park, because those people are going to pay for it first. We're missing the opportunity to use it as a equalizer. And if we roll it out at public elementary schools, public middle schools, and then public high schools, right? That should be out the 5G rollout strategy. That would be a brilliant one, because it would be equitable, it would be diverse, and everybody could benefit. Oh, and by the way, let's, when you're within a certain, you know, or if you have a school laptop, by the way, it's free for you too, right? That's easy things to do. Roll it out in the schools first, give the kids laptops that connect to it free. Bam, right? Like, that's a huge separate, and then provide some extra training to get into STEM careers and stuff. And then once they're in STEM careers, support them. You know, there's some simple things we can do to, you know, we to grab it and run with it. And we have that possibility now. And it started with, you know, getting woke up during the pandemic.
Well, we're all about, like, cicadas about to go out and fly. Todd Marks is here from MindGrow, one of my favorite guests. Baltimore company right down here in South Baltimore, trying to make some good things happen. A big thanks to our friends at Rofo. I got the Rofo coffee and the Cole Roofing mug here. And a big appreciation to our friends at Wise Markets as well for really creating a format where we can have what I call wise conversations. We call them intelligent conversations here at Baltimore Positive. I want to go backwards because you and I, we wind through all these conversations, but I want to go back to transportation as it relates to Red Line, Pete Buttigieg, trains, and then high speed, right? I've been over to Hong Kong. I've been to Japan.
Oh,
I've been on the high speed trains. I see how to get from here to there very, very quick. I mean, it blew me away when I took the high speed train to the Hong Kong airport.
Have you looked at the opportunity in Cherry Hill? There, like, if I was anybody in this city, I would be buying real estate in Cherry Hill right now, because that is where the maglev is supposed to touch down.
Well, the maglev is something that has become, like everything else, politicized into how does it help black people, white people, poor people, East people, city people. But the thing for me is the proximity to D.C. Look, man, I'm old school Baltimore. I hate D.C., right? Like, I hate the Redskins, hate the Senators, hate the concept of the Nationals. Love the Caps and the Wizards and the Bullets because they played over on this side. My father hated the Bullets because they left Baltimore, right? Nate Poland. So there was this anti-Washington thing, and they would come up here and pet us on the head and support our baseball team with the Washington Post and their Chardonnay and like all that when Camden Yards was built. So there's always been this going on from like the sports world part of it. But where we are now is proximity to real estate, value, tax base. Now there's statehood, and maybe they're going to be a part of our state or probably not, depending on what some crazy woman in Maine wants. But I would say this for the maglev and for what it was supposed to do, which a guy like me that can walk two blocks away, my Dundalk friend John Keller worked at the Library of Congress in the Clinton administration. He's been down in Little Rock for two decades running the Clinton Library and doing all that. But I remember being from Dundalk, and in 1993, 1994, 1995, he would drive to Camden Yards, park his car, and take the MARC into D.C. every day. And like, he'd show up at my house at 7 o'clock for dinner and a beer. I'd be like, you work in D.C.? Like, how do you work? And like, how can you commute to D.C. every day? He's like, oh, dude, it's easy. I get work done on the train, and it's easy, and it's there, and it works, and it runs, and it's 10 minutes in the car and 40 minutes on the train, and I'm there. And hey, sometimes people drive to Hunt Valley, and it takes an hour and a half. Right?
Like, so, unicorn around here. Like, you take a train to work? Go to Connecticut, right?
They're after like, pandemic, how much are we going to need that sort of commute mindset where you think about, I need to work near where I live, live near where I work? I think a lot of that paradigm has shifted. And I don't know what to make of that. You're smarter than me about what that means for a Red Line or a MARC line or for the Beltway or for any sort of transportation or what's going to happen to all these big buildings behind me, these concrete buildings that were set up to have worker bees in there doing worker bee stuff. This is where the big picture of people like MindGrub and you come along, because I scratch my head and I say, I thought the maglev was a great idea because people would commute. Now I'm wondering whether people are ever going to commute to a job in the way we thought about that for the last century.
Well, the maglev is a brilliant idea. We absolutely need it. I mean, the first stop is DC to BWI and then BWI to Baltimore. And despite the fact that, you know, both are true, we are going to work from home more, but we're still going to meet up in our concrete jungles. We're still going to travel the world. We might even travel more now and work wherever we are. So as far as getting to BWI so I can get on a plane, that's probably more important post-pandemic than it was pre-pandemic. As far as being able to get into downtown Baltimore, I don't know that that is as relevant. And meaning I don't see 100% of the downtown Baltimore population commuting into work 5 days a week, right? Whereas before we would have talked about what are we going to do with the Conway Light Street intersection, right?
But this is why people lived in Otterbein or where I live or in Federal Hill, because they had a job downtown or at Hopkins, or they could ride their bike or they could walk. Like that whole, I'm going to work and live within a mile and a half, literally.
And there's more of that. There's absolutely going to be more of that, which is why we don't have to worry about Conway as much, because we're not going to have so many people from the county coming in every single day, day in and day out, to get to downtown, right? Meanwhile, the amount of rideshare programs go up, the amount of autonomous vehicles go up, the amount of individual drivers will go down, right? So we probably maybe even hit our max road capacity, right? As far as individual drivers in cars driving on roadways, particularly when you look at the big picture of things around that precipice of our population might start going down too, if we don't make more babies or immigrate people. You know, you look at, you know, the Japans and Europes of the world, right? Their population is actually decreasing and they're not producing enough.
Kids are expensive
to pay for the aging population, right? And so we need our millennials to keep driving the economic engine to pay for our retiring boomers, right? It's very important.
Well, you locked them in the house for a year. I'm thinking this is going to be a fun summer to be single, right? Yeah. You know, with a shot. I'm just figuring at some point babies are going to happen. But that speaks to contraception in our country too. You know, just that's where we are 100 years later, that if you don't want babies, you can have all the fun and not have the babies. Well, we didn't have that. You know, they didn't have that during FDR, right?
I bet you there's going to be COVID babies in a good way. Meaning, you know how they had like the war boom when all the soldiers came back from war, then there was a boon of children. I think this last year probably produced a little bit more kids, but not enough to defeat the trend of aging population having less kids. And that happens with pretty much all advanced countries. So that's going to happen. And the way you combat that is through immigration. You just make sure you're, you know, importing the best and the brightest, you know, to keep enhancing your country. Although I think we need to start thinking, you know, beyond Baltimore and DC or our country, we need to start thinking of the world. You know, I constantly say we need to think of how do we, you know, populate other planets, you know, because obviously, you know, something takes out Earth, we're gone if we're not repopulating other planets. And I know other people, those are the big picture. Around here though, we are the redheaded stepchild of DC. We're the underdogs. We should embrace that. We shouldn't try to cut off a maglev from coming into Baltimore. It's a huge economic, you know, touchdown that we should embrace, right? We just need to make sure that that, you know, that money makes its way all the way around Baltimore. And that's why I'm saying a grid. So what's the plan then, you know, to get the red line back? But now the red line is just the subway basically west to east Baltimore. And if the maglev touches down in Cherry Hill, which is great for Cherry Hill, how do we not displace the current citizens that are there? And then how do we connect the transportation from West Baltimore, from East Baltimore to Cherry Hill? And, you know, it's all those considerations. So we need a grid of transportation, a grid of internet connectivity. We need a grid of, you know, equitable education. And that, obviously, we're looking at a state level. And I'm encouraged by, you know, having the state kind of oversee education.
Go Kerwin.
Yeah, go Kerwin. I mean, the cost, I mean, I think we can do it through, you know, policy and not, you know, throwing as much money at the problem.
When I hear that, you say the cost, I think, what are the cost of uneducated children? What's the cost of an uneducated population that 75 million people voted for a con man? Like, I wonder that every day. So I always tell you a cost of education, and I'm thinking, what would my life be without it? What would you,
right.
You know?
Well, it's not the spend as much. Like, if we just focused on, you know, quality. I had this product at one point called Edulizer, and I was thinking, it's actually, the URL still exists, believe it or not, but The point was, I was
Googling it right now.
School system, and it looks like it's 80s. Entire school system, and I was going to look at where are the best teachers and where are the most in need students. And then it was called Edulizer because I was going to, make education equitable.
You know, I did an incredible piece with Dr. David Hornbeck last year down at Fadley's. We did three segments, and we talked literally for an hour about equity and equal. and the debate around that. And I'm like, I know a lot of words. I'm a writer. I've had a thesaurus. Like, let's talk about this. And we really, and you just summed it up very well in one sentence.
Separate but equal. That's why I started out saying we're segregated. We have separate but equal. No, it's not even equal, because like if we made it equitable, we would have we should have looked at this pandemic at the education system. First of all, had our teachers trained on the art of Zoom and how to connect an engaging learning session. They're getting there now, but it took 14 months.
What about the part where we trained the parents how to have the kid in the other room on the Zoom? That was a bigger issue, I think, than the teachers.
It's sad. My kids' grades went up, so I wasn't complaining, but they literally would put their computer on and say, oh, I'm picture phobic. And they turn off their mic, turn off their picture, play their video games. It's sad. But what we could have done is we could have mixed it up, and we could have said, these are the best and the brightest teachers. Now that no one's reporting to school, we're going to give the lower socioeconomic students access to the brightest teachers, right? And we're going to let those budding teachers that need to learn, who might have unfortunately ended up in inner city schools, because that's how it works, right? The top teachers get to kind of pick where they want to go. And, you know, the inner city schools, you know, can't afford as much as the counties pay, for instance. And so you end up with the budding teachers. But if those budding teachers said, hey, we now want you to teach a GT math class in Roland Park High School, whatever, I'm being facetious now, but then they wouldn't have to worry about the, you know, social issues and the discipline issues and, you know, accountability issues.
They can learn how to teach.
They can learn how to teach.
Yeah.
Right. But we don't make it. We don't do that. It's so geographically based. You know, that's why we need to mix it up. Everything we do needs to think of it as a grid. And where does the grid have assets and where does the grid have needs? And where can those assets serve those needs? And then we need to migrate them there, whether it's digital or physical, or, you know, creating, you know, this grid system of physical, such as 5G, such as transportation, such as workforce development centers, good workforce development centers. We have some good ones. We need to make sure that they are, you know, kind of proliferated around the city. Anyway, there's a lot we can do, but optimistically, we are on the right path now.
Well, I'll just say this, and I want to give you a forum to talk about MindGrub and your big thoughts and the future of the city. Todd March is here. He's with MindGrub. All of our intelligent conversations brought to you by our friends at Wise Markets. They have signed up. We got great local regional sponsors. I know you work with local people. You work with our friends at Ed Royal Farms. Tell everybody what MindGrub does and what the big picture is, because I keep driving by your little cafe down on Ford Avenue, and I'm at your place. Where is your company and what does MindGrub do at this point?
So MindGrub is an agency and a consultancy. We make mobile apps, websites, and conduct marketing for our clients. And really our big picture is we want to take on the really tough problems, the tough challenges. Like, you know, just airdrop us in, throw us in the tough challenges, and we love taking those on. Well, we get really good at, you know, inbound marketing, marketing automation, you know, more mundane mobile applications. We're almost 200 employees now, or 200 team members. And we've really grown this last year as a result of the
pandemic. Your office isn't just Baltimore, right? Your office is the world.
Yeah,
right, we're now,
able to go a little more virtual. Our home is Baltimore, you know, but we now have offices along the East Coast, and we're trying to get kind of branch out. You know, I think a lot of the kind of southern and western states really look at, you know, Baltimore because of, you know, our juxtaposition in that kind of northeast corridor, but still having, you know, maybe some southern ideals. That being the case, just coincidentally, a lot of our client base and our team member base is, I call it the Appalachian banana, And it follows the Appalachian Mountains. We got presence in Charlotte right now. We're starting to attract a lot of clients in Atlanta and New Orleans, and then through Austin and Denver and Austin. And a little bit in South Florida.
You mentioned some pretty hip towns there. I mean, Charlotte's coming to life. Obviously, Asheville, everybody knows about. But progressive places in these pockets of places that are not progressive places by birth, right?
Right. It's actually those cities that are on the cusp. Like, you look in New York, they're always been progressive. But, you know, I think they can't get out of their own way of being too progressive and not even able. A lot of New Yorkers can't see the world from, you know, from the, you know, the suburban and the rural areas. They just can't comprehend the world from those perspectives. Whereas you look at Baltimore, we are, you know, a melting pot. You know, it only takes 30 minutes and you start hitting like Carroll County and Frederick. You know,
we're a progressive state with a Republican governor. We're weird. We're really weird, right?
Yeah, right. Exactly. I mean, you 10 minutes, you can start seeing farm fields from the city. But at the same time, we just had, I don't know, a $12 million condo get sold downtown or whatever, the $8 million. I don't know what the cost.
Mine's going on the market this week. Jeff Mueller, Mueller and Gary. It's not $12 million. It just has a $12 million view. It's far less than that. So please, Todd, for you and mine, Grubb, and on the backside of this and big picture for when the city's fully opened and all of that, give me a big picture for Baltimore, where this should be in 5 years. Like, I hear so much about the harbor and Harbor Place. You know, you see what's happening along the waterway, I should say, on this side. My Chiron's opposite. Right. But going toward, let's say, toward Canton and the development of the water line here, the future of the city, 5 years from now, what's downtown look like?
So in general, what you're going to have is because of knowledge work and digital economies, you're going to get a little bit of a leveling of the professional workforce from, let's call it, New York to D.C. So there'll be still a lot of upward mobility for us because, you know, Baltimore is, you know, 30 to 40% lower cost of living and lower on the salary scales for that knowledge work. And you won't have to even commute to D.C. or commute to New York. I used to commute to New York and D.C.
See, that's where the maglev would have, like, you know, I would have been much more about, like, people will use that. So I just think the pandemic has made me rethink, because you can't have everything. Well, I was number one maglev guy. I love going to D.C.
Maglev will have to use to the airport. Look at Tokyo, right? Like, the maglev is the biggest means of, like,
the artery, no doubt.
Tokyo or Shanghai, or I think it's Shanghai. Right. It's the maglev that gets you into Shanghai airport, that last mile. It's beautiful to go to BWI from Baltimore and from D.C., like, just super quick. Like, love that. And going all the way up into New York, again, that corridor, anything that makes us flow, you know, with efficiency and no friction, have equitable, you know, knowledge worker jobs. And then where Baltimore can put itself on the map and think it's all about more mobility, yet less mobility. So the ability to have more instantaneous mobility in your hyper kind of geographic region, which I would say in the future is DC to New York, right? And maybe, you know, Richmond, if you looked at the construction between DC and Richmond, I might be Richmond, Boston now, realistically, but that real tight corridor.
And they've made Fredericksburg cool, right? Like, literally, if you turn it down.
So Fredericksburg, right? They're in it too. Right? Sucking it all in until you start really getting drop off. And then it's different, you know, vastly different energy systems and transportation systems and stuff. But that corridor, you're going to get both a lot more mobility quicker, as well as less need for mobility, but digitally knowledge workers. Now, things that are physical, that infrastructure, that is where we need to focus, right? So some things are just going to happen, like, you know, knowledge jobs. And so people then are going to very much look at and analyze their physical situation. And that is what will need to be as kind of gridded out, you know, not homogenous as far as infrastructure, whether it is 5G transportation infrastructure, but then as unique as it can be in an area, because that's what's going to attract somebody. If I can get the same salary anywhere between Richmond and Boston, right? I want to now look at when I park myself somewhere, what is in my radius of amenities, right? So now it is
that. I know what I'm making. Now what am I spending and what am I getting for that, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so Baltimore, then we need to look at like that downtown we talked about. We need to make sure it is great place to live, work, and play, right? We have now the you know, whatever they call them, downtown one and downtown two that have been in 2 years of receivership. Let's make those cool, like the fish market in Seattle, right? Like, let's make it a cool area to live and, you know, work. And still, that's cool for tourists too, right? So we got to focus on that. And then where we can really stand out is in that light manufacturing, inventive, physical, industrial space, right? Because even though we can ship parts and everything, you look at the, you know, sheer costs. If you can, as you think more locally, you're also going to think about getting your parts more locally and manufacturing more locally, right? So some things will be global, other things will be local. And I think, you know, depending when you start getting into, you know, the fact that we are polar, the fact that politically we're going to keep bouncing back and forth, you know, we're going to also have to make sure that we have local production capacity for anything that we might need as a safety mechanism against, you know, bad and or good politics. And so you're going to see areas like in Baltimore, the Carroll Camden area, and Highland Town, which you mentioned earlier, right, where those right now have big, you know, big acres of land that were highly utilized back in the day for manufacturing. Now it's generally gone a bit untapped, but because of modern manufacturing techniques, you're going to start to see more modern industrial manufacturing, light manufacturing happening there. You have like the Wicomico building now. You have like robotics, like Galen Robotics in there. You have clothing manufacturers showing up in there, right? And these are a bunch of budding businesses that we used to do back in the day. Then we got global and we outsourced it. And the pandemic made us think local again, right? Best thing for my family, you know, we had all nine of us, you know, trapped in our house for a year, and it brought us really close and really tight. And now some of them, you know, back to the Mind Pub, are going to start that restaurant with my wife.
Nice.
It's super cool. Yeah. So
I'm looking forward to getting over there. Make sure when you get it open at whatever point you come back on, and we'll do all that. Our time's short. Todd, I love visiting with you. I should have you on more than once a year as the pandemic goes. The whole idea of Baltimore Positive was to have Baltimore people on telling Baltimore stories. And the one thing I learned in the beginning of this with Don 2.5 years ago was, man, there are a lot of good people here. A lot of smart people. There are a lot of people who care a lot. So we only hear about the bad things sometimes when you put the news on and you think in the suburbs, but man, there are a lot of good people doing good stuff here. And I know you're a connector to bring those people together. And I appreciate you making some time and coming on with us today.
Yeah. Well, you too, Nestor. Thanks for having me. And I know we can always chat again.
Oh, we will. And we will. Todd Marks here from Mind Grub. Also supporting our friends at Chicken Palooza. I'm wearing the 19 model. These are like old Woodstock tour shirts, like the old Bowie tours. I'm keeping them around as we get into 2021. We'll have some Chicken Palooza later on this summer as well. Big shout out to Royal Farm for supporting Mind Grub and us. All local, kind of keeping it local here. We are WNST.net, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, picking up those wise conversations at BaltimorePositive.com.